What's going on, everyone? Jetta Cameron, John Rich. It is 94 WIP. Great to be with you off and rolling this Wednesday morning. Well, a lot going on in Philly sports. You know, the Eagles obviously on to Cincinnati, and they do so with a 4-2 record, which is good. So we'll talk a lot about the Birds today and, you know, Jalen Hurts against Burrow and that whole thing approaching Sunday. And there's also a lot approaching tonight with the 76ers. So it's the season debut. Be excited if you want. And it's great to feel excited, but, man, it's hard to feel really excited when you know no Joel and no Paul George. And, by the way, not just no Joel tonight, but he's going to miss at least the first week of the season. So we'll get into all that, including how the organization handled it and what it all means. Flyers back at it tonight. They have not had a particularly good start to the year, so they could use a W. Look, we'll talk about it all with you at 215-592-9494. Rich.
Hello, Joe.
Hello there, Johnny.
The average lifespan of a peasant in the Middle Ages...
Let me guess.
This is what I did when he asked me before the show.
Can I ask a question, James?
I still don't know. He didn't tell me.
No, I have
right.
a question before the answer.
Sure.
The term peasant.
Yes.
In a politically correct world. I mean, they were then, but we are now. Is peasant, Devin, is that politically correct in 2024? That person's a peasant.
I don't think people are going to get.
The peasant.
Like if you're talking about
I don't think we would do that.
I'm not
now.
Ripping Richie. I'm just saying.
No, they were peasants then. It's historical.
We have in society historically untouchables.
In a feudal society, you can discuss serfdom.
I feel like a peasant of the 76ers.
No, I hear you. All right, John, I will guess average age for a peasant, I will say, is 29.
I was going to go 27.
I said 28, and then I said 32, then lowered it to 28.
Okay.
So we're in the same idea.
You guys all hit it. There's a massive range here. I tried to narrow it down. The range that they give is 25 to 35.
Well, how about it?
Now, they said the range depended,
it depended
on a lot of things. The point is... Our show's wiped out.
Yeah, we're all done.
We're done.
Maybe Devin could maybe survive a couple more.
Maybe. All right. So let's start with the Sixers. Guys, we have not led a show with the 76ers in a while. We're gonna talk a heavy dose of Eagles today. By the way, Sirianni, if you missed it yesterday, joined us fairly late in the show. We're gonna play the interview we had with Sirianni. It was a pretty wide-ranging conversation at about 6:35 today. So if you missed that yesterday, Sirianni on the win on the win as it related to him coming out of the tough week, the whole deal, Saquon Barkley, all that. 6:35 Sirianni today. You'll hear that from yesterday. Let's start Sixers. So the news, obviously, from yesterday was not good. It's not surprising, but it's not good. So, John, and I'll ask this to everybody at 215-592-9494. What is your reaction in whatever direction or directions you want to take it? To knowing that Joel Embiid will not play tonight, will not play the first week, and we just found out yesterday, about 32 hours from the start of the Sixers season. John, you get first crack at it. Sir, the floor is yours.
It just feels like my first reaction is deflation and, are you kidding me? You know, are you serious? He didn't play in the preseason for what was called injury management. And... You know, this is not the end of the world, but it's more of the same frustration that we've come to expect.
For sure.
From this organization and from this player, from this individual in particular, who I want to love and who I try to love. They've mismanaged this already before the season has even begun, which is just incredible. But again, par for the course, par for what we expect. Joel can't play because he and the team absolutely failed at managing his health. And now they're managing his health. You know, the organization strung us along, essentially led us to believe that maybe he could do this.
I agree with you. No question about it.
By telling, you know, they didn't really tell us the truth on what was going on with Joel this preseason. And now he's out for at least the first week.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Like, I want him healthy too, but I want to see him play. I want to be excited about the team we put out there on the court. And okay, Paul George too.
Yeah, but you get that one because that was a real
understand. I
issue.
Saw the injury. Yeah, yeah. It's gonna. I know he'll be back. I know it's sore and all that. Yeah. But right now, what I feel is deflation, and the saddest part. I just really want to try to be excited.
Yeah,
I really want to try to meet this new squad with Paul George and Tyrese and Kelly Oubre and Joel all recombined. And how excited can we really be now? I don't even know when Joel can physically play in an NBA game, despite the fact that, you know, he told us he's going to play in the Olympics and everything's going to be okay. Like, that was okay. This is not. That was a long time ago. You've had the summer.
Right.
You've had September and October. Like, what were you the management of the knee then? Like, what was occurring? So, why is this happening now?
No, that's a great question. So, look.
Too little, too late. And that's a real concern. Because we've seen that too often from this organization and from this player also.
Well, sure. All right. So here's the deal again for everyone at 215-592-9494. The news as it was announced yesterday that Joel's out at least the first week, your reaction and what it means and on all the levels. Let me just start with this. Here's my reaction. First off, I'll just say overarching comment. It's incredibly disappointing on so many levels. So it immediately obviously puts all of us as fans back on our heels after what was, for the most part, an exciting all season. I mean, you know, rarely do you add a player of Paul George's caliber. How great he'll still be, we'll see. But rarely do you add a player that good. I mean, it's rare. So, right. You know.
He's a superstar, and he is a guy
that people like. I wouldn't call him a superstar, but he's a star, and I'm immediately, and we are all immediately on our heels. So number one, that stinks. Number two, I believe that this means that Joel Embiid is not healthy. Now, you might say, well, of course, he's missing tonight's game. Well, here's the problem. If you listen to Nick Nurse, and we'll play the audio shortly, of what he said, he would not confirm or deny if Joel Embiid is actually healthy or not, which means there's one of two things going on. Either he's healthy.
Come on.
No, just listen to me for a second. I'm going to be a lawyer here for a second. Either he's healthy and they're choosing not to play him, or he's not healthy. I believe he's not healthy.
Joe.
Yeah.
It's the season opener.
I'm aware. I know.
Why on earth would he be healthy and not playing?
Well, I agree with you. I mean, there's a theory that he will sit out.
No, there's not.
No. I will say this. That when you don't play back-to-backs when healthy, that is about.
It's the season opener.
No, John, I agree with you. You don't have to back me down.
Right.
I'm with you. What I'm saying is there will be times this year, or at least we hope there are times this year, if he is actually healthy, that if he misses games like back-to-backs, it's because it's
sure.
about trying to prevent
an injury.
They're managing
him.
No, I know.
Yeah, sure, and so, I'm fine with that.
So,
do it.
All right, so I think he's injured. Now, this strikes me like the new norm. This is what really scares me the most about the situation. So typically when he has missed time, typically, it has been because he suffered an injury and then misses whatever, a week, a month, whatever. He misses time because there was an injury that's new. This strikes me like it may be the beginning of the new norm, which is like the Chase Utley second half of the career, where it's like he's just got a debilitating knee situation. And it's just going to be, this is it. This is what you got. He'll play sometimes. He won't play other times. It's not like he had a meniscus tear 13 days ago. No. This is just what you have. An athlete who, by the way, they just signed to a big extension, who seemingly can't answer the bell with enough regularity to be considered a healthy athlete. That's my biggest concern. As it relates to the season, look, it hurts on a lot of levels. Obviously, seeding will be affected. There's no way it can't be. And Nick Nurse had a ridiculous answer yesterday about seeding and the implications that really caused me to, frankly, lose a lot of respect for Nick Nurse. And I like Nick Nurse. I don't know him on a personal level, but I've admired his NBA career, you know, his journey, if you will. Beat the Sixers in 2019. Seems like one of the better coaches in pro basketball. He's handling it poorly. Of course it will hurt their seeding, which obviously for the postseason means, number one, harder to have home court advantage. You might not have it at all. Number two, you're going to face tougher teams earlier in the playoffs. We saw that last year when the Sixers were in a round against the Knicks in the first round. It's like, well, this isn't like when you get to play the Nets and they got Manny, Moe, and Jack out there. Like, you might lose in the first round, so you got that reality. And then, of course, the continuity for players aspect is massive. I mean, every single year, it's like you got like three or four guys back and eight new dudes. Every year. And this year's not that different. You got a couple guys back, but you know, you ripped up the bench, you changed this guy, changed that guy. So they got to learn to play together, and this will make that difficult. Very difficult. One more thing, and oh, by the way, this ain't a small thing. Then, John, there's how the organization handled it and how they always handle it. You know, them informing the public yesterday about 32 hours prior to tip-off of the season opener is a disgrace. And here's why I feel super confident I can say that.
The deception.
Yeah, and here's why I feel really confident in that. You can make an argument, and again, everyone, you can weigh in 215-592-9494 on all of this. You can make a reasonable argument that if Joel Embiid was it was announced yesterday or today that Joel Embiid was going to miss the season opener. Okay, I get it. It's not what you'd call a game time decision. It's what you'd call a day before decision. Okay, it's reasonable. He's going to miss a game. It went close to tip off. Unfortunately, the pendulum swung the other way. Okay, got it. They announced yesterday he's missing the first week, at least. Don't tell me they didn't know this sooner. They hid the information. They did what they always do. And it is why we say over and over and over again, it is hard to like the 76ers as an organization.
And now I trust you even less, right? Organization. And now I trust you even less, Joel.
It really, like, this is, guys, this is a team that I love. A team that I love. This is Dr. J and Mo Cheeks and Moses and Bobby Jones and Allen Iverson and Aaron McKee and yeah. Billy Cunningham and Larry Brown and Dikembe. Like, this is the organization
being drugged through the mud guys by this current activity, this current action.
That we, as fans, get dragged through the mud,
yes,
because of the actions over the last roughly 10 years of the crew running it now. It's a disgrace. Yeah. It is a disgrace.
I hate the way you make us feel about this organization,
right?
Now.
It really, yeah. So look,
It is a travesty.
It is.
And it's unfair to the greatness of the organization, of the greatness, of the things that we love, that we have
look,
seen.
Look, it hurts my heart because, it there's a lot complicated. Like, hey, let's try to put a person on the moon back in the 60s. That's complicated, all right? That takes, like, real effort and real ingenuity and, like, you got to get there somehow, figure it out. The stuff we're talking about, it's not that complicated. Being real, being upfront, having a good organization. I mean, come on.
All right, good morning to you. Hope you're having a great start to your, a Wednesday morning here, 94 WIP, Joe Cameron, John Ritchie. All right, so we're going to get to Nick Sirianni in about 20 minutes and what he said to us yesterday. But let's crank it up here on the Sixers. It's a disgrace. It really is. And it makes it hard. Man, does it make it hard to dive in with enthusiasm. To the phones we go. Your reaction with all. Let's kick it off with Dan in Philadelphia. Dan, good morning, buddy.
Good morning, guys. How are we?
Doing well, Dan.
You know, when I call in about the Sixers, it's never good. They are a disgrace of an organization.
Yeah.
Josh Harris's number one goal, right, is to have a superstar or two. It doesn't really care about winning. If winning happens, great. But it's this, have a superstar or two to keep selling these tickets. He could care, literally couldn't care less. And his main objective at this point is to get this arena so then he can flip around and sell this team. If they knew, so first of all, let's do a little timeline here, right? Ever since Ed Schneider sold the team, there's no want to for the fans, right? It became a business, which obviously it is. You've got to make money first, but every organization in this city makes money and looks out for the fans, right? Look at John Middleton. The guy consistently almost spends $1 billion a year and tries to figure out the perfect pieces to make this lineup go. Josh Harris, I mean, do you really think George is going to be the answer here? I don't.
Well, I don't think it'll be enough for them to win the title. I appreciate that they're trying. I do appreciate, Dan, to be fair to Josh Harris, and I'm not in the mood to defend him, but he does spend a lot of money on the Sixers team payroll, and that's good. But he leaves so much to be desired in so many other ways. You know what's crazy, Dan? So much of what they mess up are some of the simpler things.
I mean, it's not that hard to just be upfront about things, but they're consistently not.
All right. Don't you think it would be better for the Sixers if they traded Joel Embiid and got a boatload of stuff back?
So
don't you think that?
Look, here's my answer to that. My up until this moment, my point has been let's try to win with him because you know he is a rare talent and give it a shot. I understand why for about a year or two there have been some that have said pull the cord on this thing now.
Yes. I said it for 4 years.
Yeah, Rhea's been very clear about that for a couple of years. I wouldn't do it yet. Obviously, I'm getting closer. Obviously, the more information comes out on the negative side, he could be diminished as far as what you get for him. I still tend to think, Dan, they would get a huge package. You know, I mean, if let's put it this way. My point is, I don't think you don't get a huge package after this year. I don't think. I could be wrong. Like, he could suffer some massive injury, and people say he's damaged goods. But, like, Mikal Bridges just got the Nets 5 first-round draft picks. I think it was 5.
Has he missed a game in his career?
No, but he's also not as good as Joel Embiid.
Not in the same hemisphere as a player.
Yeah. And now he's got a weird shooting motion, whatever that's about.
Yeah, he's got
about.
A broken jumper.
What in the world?
Not looking good.
It makes me sad.
Yes. It doesn't make me sad because he plays for the Knicks.
Yeah,
so.
But he's a Novi guy. It's a weird one. Anyway, Dan, I hear you, man. I'm frustrated, too.
Had we traded him, we could have been 2 or 3 years into a new rebuild, right? And they make this announcement in the offseason that, oh, they extend Joel Embiid to max contract. Therefore, everybody's like, oh, we still have Joel Embiid. Let's re-up on our season tickets. And then you find out he's off for the first week. It's all a money grab. I understand he spends money, but the money he's spending makes him money. And that's what it comes down to with Josh Harris. And this organization, this team, especially with Joel Embiid, is not going to win anything. And they're not going to advance past the second round of the playoffs. So what you see is what you get for the past 2 or 3 years. You're not going to get any more. You're probably going to get less. So for anybody to have enthusiasm about this team, they're just fooling themselves.
All right, Dan, we got you. I appreciate the call. I want to hear from Nick Nurse because I thought a lot, you know, it's a shame. I don't know if shame's the right word. It's demoralizing that, you know, Nick Nurse is a guy through the nonsense has, I think, been a dignified dude who stands tall and is someone who, and I feel proud as a Philadelphia sports fan, he coaches the Sixers. Now, I didn't love all that he did last year at the end of the year and how he coached the team, but he seems like a good guy. But
He sounds like he's at the end of his rope. Like, I heard his voice.
Well, let's play this audio because I didn't like...
He sounds exasperated to me.
Well, I don't like his answers. I'm exasperated with him now because this was a poor way for him to handle it yesterday. I thought this was total nonsense yesterday. And a great question, by the way, and total nonsense by Nick Nurse.
And I guess just for clarification with Joel's plan, while there hasn't been a setback, and this has been part of the plan, for clarification, is he injured or is this more a long-term preventative thing with Joel?
This is getting him to where he needs to be to get him on the court.
Now, let me be clear. The Dave Uram, who asked that question, when he says there hasn't been a setback, he doesn't definitively know there hasn't. He's saying, because it had just been said by Nick Nurse, there hadn't been a setback. So he's saying, okay, you're saying there hasn't been a setback. So it's like you said earlier, John, so is he injured? You just hold him out? Like, which is it? And that answer by Nick Nurse is unacceptable. There's about 20,000 people to go down to the Wells Fargo Center tonight. Devin, what's your reaction to this?
So, Nick Nurse's answer, that answer to me is more acceptable than his answer to the previous question that we heard last segment, right? Where I actually think he's telling the truth.
On what part?
On the part where Joel Embiid isn't necessarily injured, but he's also not ready to go yet. Like, I think that is truly what it comes down to, and that's why Joel Embiid is not playing.
What does that mean, though?
It means that this is part of their plan. And I don't agree with it. I'm frustrated, too. And I don't like the approach. I don't like them not telling fans until the last minute.
So you think this is load management?
Yes, I think it is part of their load management.
It's crazy
to load
manage.
Because he didn't play in the preseason. He's been partially scrimmaging, partially practicing. He has lost weight. But he's not ready to go out there and play in a regular season
load
game.
Manage.
I agree. I would have loved to see him play in the season opener. I would have loved to see him play tonight, and I expected him to, and I'm upset.
It's just so bogus. If that's what they're doing, just start the year, you have somehow mismanaged
Nick Nurse's
this
answer
so poorly.
As, like, I think he was being very honest.
But,
I think
but
that
Devin,
is exactly
he has to then say he's not injured.
Yeah. It's weird.
He didn't
right.
say, hey, ladies and gentlemen, listen to me. Listen.
Joel Embiid is not injured. We're choosing not to play him as part of a strategy, which previously we've referred to as load management. Just know we're implementing it more this year. He's not injured. That's not what he said.
It does make you question, are they protecting him because they supported Joel Embiid playing in the Olympics? I loved seeing Embiid play in the Olympics.
Complete joke, by the
Perhaps he got injured or tweaked the knee, and they're kind of trying to keep that under wraps, and now he's working his way back.
All right, I want to play this other piece of audio. That I mean, there's a lot, but these are two that get to the heart of a lot of it. I thought another really good question. Here's Nick Nurse.
Nick, I think to that point, when people hear you guys have a plan, they think of those things like not playing back-to-backs, resting him in the middle of the season. But without any kind of setback, I'm just saying he's on schedule throughout the preseason. How do we square that he's not ready to just play games? Just trying to figure out. Because it's not like the regular season opener snuck up on you guys.
Yeah, I don't know what to say to you, right? He's in practice. He's looking good. He's progressing. He's not quite ready yet. He'll be ready pretty soon. I don't know what else to say to you. Okay?
All right, now James, you have been a little bit more bullish on this plan, but can you square that answer with a plan that's more load management focused?
Well, I mean, it sounds like it. He's saying he's out there, he's practicing, he looks good, he's just not ready to go for the game.
Yeah.
And let me clarify real quick. The organization not telling people that he wasn't going to play in week one when I believe they absolutely knew about it, I think is a flat-out, full-on disgrace. There's no excuse for it. If they had just said a week ago, hey, Embiid's not going to be ready, I'm fine with it.
Totally agree.
I don't love the idea of load managing week one, but ultimately week one is just one game. Mm-hmm. Like, I know we make a big deal about
it. Well, three games, but, you know.
But you know what I mean. Yeah. My point being the beginning of the season doesn't ultimately really matter that much. We can't sit here for the last 5 years and say all that matters is the playoffs. That's it. And that's what I believe. I don't care what they do in the regular season. As long as they play well in the playoffs, like, who cares? I know seeding and all that, but ultimately, they just need to be good in the playoffs. So I can't sit here and say, I just want Embiid healthy for the playoffs or as healthy as possible for the playoffs. And then the organization is coming out and saying, hey, we're prioritizing the playoffs with this guy. We're not worried about the regular season. We're going to worry about having him ready in the playoffs and be upset about that. Like, that's what I want.
Right, this is just common courtesy to be ready for the start of the freaking season.
Well, it's not about courtesy. It's about his body and his ability to be ready in April,
Two different issues. What they say is about common courtesy.
Whether they told us he's playing or not is a separate issue from him not playing.
Rhea, this whole thing, where are you?
So Embiid was okay to be ready to play Olympic training camp, play in the Olympics, but not be able to play the first two games of the regular season. Here's the point with this guy. There's no sense in wrapping him in bubble wrap. He's going to get hurt. If there is one constant with Joel Embiid, he gets hurt. Whether it's the first game of the season, the last game of the season, he's going to be hurt. This whole thing about him going, he's going to be surrounded by superstars who are going to inject him with some other level, bring him to another. It was all bunk. He didn't even come to training camps. You heard Nick Nurse.
I heard
lost weight. Oh, okay. Really?
Here's my.
Nick Nurse, yes, he's come back really slimmer than he's ever been because of the Olympics.
But James, here's my bottom line today. This isn't about the organization. It's about Embiid. I think he is hurt.
And that's possible.
Like, when Nick Nurse doesn't affirm that there's been a setback, I don't believe him.
That's fine. That's a you thing, and because people can choose their own thing. My point is, I care about prioritizing the playoffs. I don't care. If Joel plays 10 regular season games and that's enough, fine. Like, I don't care.
Yeah, but
care.
I will say, and that's, okay.
I know you need more. Rhea's saying he's going to get injured. Well, at least try and prioritize
insane.
The playoffs.
10 games?
I'm being hyperbolic, Rhea. My point is, if he's healthy in the playoffs, I don't care as much about the regular season.
All right, but here's what I'll say. If he only plays 40 games, you're a 7 seed at best.
Might be a play-in team. Yeah,
that is a play-in seed. And there are stars out there who it's impossible to keep them on the bench. Like the Greek Freak, I bet it's hard to get him.
Well,
it's
tough as a Sixers fan. By the way, 7 o'clock today, AMA. You ask, and Huey. It is curious. We answer. AMA today at 7.
You're curious. I told you I got to hang out with Huey Lewis for a night, right?
That's pretty cool.
At the California Music Awards, where I...
He was short, is what you always told us.
He was short, but he was... man,
how short?
He was very
how short
warm.
You said like 5'4 or something like that, right?
Okay, that's short.
Yeah, probably like 5'5, maybe.
That's unfortunate.
But it feels like a lot of the musicians that I met that night at the California Music Awards were in that range.
A lot of famous people are very small.
Cruise and Stallone.
Yeah.
Just like like sized down. I told you, I went to school with Reese Witherspoon. When I first met her, I saw her. It was at what was called a cowboy party.
You went to college with Reese Witherspoon?
Yeah.
Among a thousand other people, famous people.
Yes. She was Dana's roommate.
No, not my roommate. No. My teammate.
His teammate.
My friend, Tony Vella. They're in the same dorm. They're in the same freshman dorm. We're in that freshman dorm at this cowboy party where there's all these hay bales and stuff like everywhere on the ground. And I see this, really attractive young woman over there. And it's Reese, and I realize as I start walking over there, she's standing on a hay bale. Like the reason that she looks like a normal sized person is because she's standing on a hay bale that's like a foot and a half high. She really is sized down.
Wow.
Like just petiteness.
Well, listen, okay. So she's a tiny one. All right, let's listen to Sirianni. So you can react, obviously, to everything on the Sixers, but also what you're about to hear with Sirianni. We talked to him yesterday pretty extensively after the victory. We started with that interaction he had with Saquon Barkley on the bench as they were trying to figure out how to handle the end of Saquon's game. Let's get to that and hear Sirianni.
You're 13 yards away from your career high. I would love for you to get that, but that's up to you. I'm going to take out all the starters if they don't score.
You good? Let them eat.
You sure?
Yeah, promise.
I'll listen to me. I want you to do it if you want to do it.
So I'd rather see the young boys eat.
That's great stuff, man. That is great stuff. It really is. All right, let's talk to the head coach of the Eagles. They're 4-2. And, of course, Nick Sirianni brought to us by, as he is every Tuesday at this time, by Bud Light. Pre-game with Ava Graham. Ava Graham at Saloon 151 in Westchester this Sunday before the next game. Of course, next Eagles game. Win tickets to a home game and Eagles merchandise. The aforementioned 4-2 head coach of the Birds, Nick Sirianni. Good morning, Nick.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning,
Nick.
So, Nick, a moment like that, Saquon reacting that way, we heard you post-game fired up. I mean, what he has brought to this team, if you could just talk about, holy mackerel, on the field, off the field, I mean, he just seems like a superstar player in human.
Yeah, before you even talk about the play, you just talk about the teammate, the person, the work that he puts in. There's a reason he is who he is, right? Success is not an accident, and you see it firsthand. But great teammate, you heard it right there. Had an opportunity to set his career high of rushing yards, probably against a team that he really wanted to do it against, and wanted the other guys to go out there and finish the job and get their carries and get their touches. So that speaks a lot about him, obviously. His play thus far this season has been awesome, as advertised. He really broke out in last game and really had a play that helped break out on offense that got us going. And just can't say enough about the person, can't say enough about the player. Can't tell you how thrilled I am that he's an Eagle.
Nick, let's talk about this win in the context of you. And I am going to predict that your answer is going to be no, but I'm going to ask the question because I'm fascinated. Did this win mean more to you personally? Not for the team's record, which we know a win is a win, but on a personal level, when you're in the eye of the storm like you were last week, does it mean more for you when you get a win in that context?
Yeah, you guessed it. no, every game's so important. Every game is we're going out there and putting everything we have. It's such a unique sport because you put everything you have into it for an entire week. That's a lot of work that goes into it by a lot of different people. And, you're obviously devastated every time you lose. And when you win, you're thrilled. And then it moves on to the next one. And so you always try to stay in the moment. Always want our players to think, hey, how do I be in this moment? How can I control the things I can control, and that's my work, and that's my attitude. And that was the only thing that was focused on, and I know our team was as well.
Well, how does it make you feel that your team showed the world that they have your back on Sunday?
Sure, I mean those are things you know during your all the relationships that you put in to, and all the time that you put into connecting and being part of a team. I think that this team has each other's back, right? Forget my back, though. This team has each other's back. And that's because all the time they spend together, I through practice, through, hanging out together, through off the field, through on the field, competing against each other. And so, and that's something that you're always trying, and that's what's so cool. Each and every year is you're trying to gel the team together, and that's what your hope is, because you just want to make sure you're playing better football as you continually go through the year, and the team and the connection is a big part of that. And so I just felt like it was a good week for us. We had our best week of practice, and
it was second turnover free game for Jalen back to back. Why exactly was Jalen turning it over less? That was great to see.
Yeah, I obviously have a big emphasis on that, and Jalen's playing good football and taking care of the football. It's really, you talk every week about the double positive. We talk about that every week. Did we win the explosive play battle, and did we win the turnover battle? Well, for the ball carriers, the guys, like Saquon and AJ and Kenny Gainwell, like when they get the ball in their hands, that's what they have to think of is how do I secure this ball? How do I, all those different things. Well, Jalen is responsible for creating explosive plays and taking care of the football as, oh, by the way, these 300-pound guys and Dexter Lawrence, 300 or whatever, he's huge, is trying to come down and crush him while he's trying to read a defense who's trying to deceive you. So his job is really difficult as far as, quarterbacks are one of the hardest positions to play in all sports, in my opinion, the hardest position to play in all sports. And so, we want to be explosive, which we were, and we want to take care of the football, which we were. When we are able to do that, I know so much is put on him when we have a turnover. But when we're able to play turnover free, I mean, that's so much credit goes. It's a team sport, but so much credit goes to Jalen because of all the things he's asked to do on each and individual play. So I can't tell you how pleased I am with him and how he's taking care of the football. And you're only as good as your next game. So we're on that next game and seeing how Cincinnati takes it away and what we got to do to protect it against them as well.
Nick Sirianni here, as he is every Tuesday at this time. Nick, let's talk about two first half moments that I thought were tone setters, and I just loved it. The Saquon run on your first possession, he doesn't get the first down, but he does everything he possibly can to get as close to it. It reminded me of Walter Payton. He's just banging through dudes. It was incredible. Mm-hmm. And then Cooper DeJean, basically the same kind of thing on a punt return. I mean, it was just awesome. Can you describe what that does for a sideline when they see their teammates fighting like that?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I know this team is physically tough. Right. And I know that we're mentally tough, and I know we play with relentless effort. You're always talking about identity and, what our identity is as a football team. And one thing I know is that I know this is a close team, and I know this is a team that is just a physically tough team. Mm-hmm. And we talk about that. Where can you put your physical toughness on display? Well, you put your physical toughness on display, when you have a combination block to the linebacker. You put your toughness on display. There's a play where the tight end slices across and tries to block BG, and he knocks him back and puts him into the ball carrier. Put your physical toughness on display with how you tackle. Well, as a ball carrier, the running back, puts his toughness on display when he has the ball in his hands and what he does on the sideline. Some guys will step out of bounds, and some guys will, put their shoulder down and finish the job for extra yards. And AJ had one like that too. It wasn't like where he had to lower his shoulder, but they were ripping at the ball and he got five extra yards. And so like those are moment, like when you pride yourself in being a physically tough team, those are things that really, they're going to be shown in the team meeting on Monday. And those are things that really get the sideline pump, because it's like, hey, I mean, this man tried to tackle that man and he got push back. And that is that's what's so awesome about this game is, you know, man versus man, and you know, and Saquon and Coop on the sidelines finished and got extra yards, and you know, Saquon got about 5 extra yards, and I think Coop got about 10 extra yards. That's a whole first down. That's a big deal. And so we talk about that a lot, and obviously it brings a ton of excitement. You know, I think even when the defensive guy does it, it brings more excitement, right? Because defensive guys don't have the ball a lot. I can, you know, when you watch Coop's return, you look at the sideline, and I see Slay, like, jump off the bench and just sprint over to it. And it, like, for whatever reason, it brings a lot of excitement. I really wish Saquon's hit on the sideline was on our sideline. I think it would have brought the house down there, but it was on the opposite sideline. But, you know, like, it's a great question because it does bring a ton of energy and juice to the sideline.
Nick, what's one thing you can do differently offensively this week to focus on starting faster?
Yeah, obviously that's a big, you know, that's a big thought process for us, and we're dedicated to get do everything we can possibly do to score early, score in the first quarter. We'd love to score on that first drive, and so you know those are things that you go through throughout the week, and you want to do plays that you feel like have the best chance to succeed, so you can get started fast. Every game's a little bit different, and one thing that you think is going to work, the defense's focus is on, and then you got to adjust. I think you know, I think it's just, you know, what do we do to start fast? And again, like I said, I can't give away all the secrets that we're, you know, we're searching, right? We're searching for it because we haven't been good. It's been 6 games and we haven't scored in the first quarter. So, you know, that's always going to be us putting, as coaches, putting them in positions to succeed and the players executing. And so, you know, that's going to be on our mind. You know, our first and second down plan will be on our mind. And then we're going to, you know, just like always, we're going to talk about, you know, which ones of those first and second down plan plays can go in there for the openers to ensure that we get off to a hot start.
Nick, similar question, but flipping it to the other side of the ball. What about turnover generation? I don't know if that's the right phrase, but generating turnovers defensively. I mean, you know, you've had 3 phenomenal defensive performances this year at the Saints, obviously the Browns game and the Giants game. But for the totality of the season, 6 games, only 2 turnovers created. And that hasn't gotten as much discussion by us as the offense. How do you get that going?
Yeah, you know, it's just got to constantly be on your mind. I thought we had a really good week of practice last week. As far as taking it away, and you know, that's something that, you know, I take a lot of pride in with the ball is, you know, with every team meeting that we're in, we're focusing on that. And so, you know, having that same focus when we're over there on defensive side, and as myself as the head coach, focusing on that as well. So we put a lot of emphasis in there, and we had a lot of turnovers at practice. But this week, we had one come out. Jalex forced a fumble. We had one on an interception. You know, I'm not sure Daniel Jones would have thrown that ball if he didn't know that we were offsides there. But, you know, I think that our mindset's in the right place. Practices look the right. And I kind of compare that sometimes to sacks, where it just kind of, you know, it blows open when it blows open. You know, like obviously these last 2 weeks with our sacks we've generated a lot of sacks, and we're putting in the work to ensure that we have some success here. But make no mistake about it, we got to coach it better and we got to execute it better, because we got to take the football away, and that's a big emphasis that we're thinking about. And sometimes, you know, I think you can think about that and sacrifice the tackle. You can do both. You can be a sound team tackling while also taking the football away. And that was, you know, we've made some major strides in our tackling. I think they showed me the stat. We were 7th in the NFL before last night on missed tackles. And so, you know, it's got to be the same emphasis there on the ball.
Nick, are we a running football team?
Damn right.
Yes!
I think you saw that, you know, anytime you go over 200 yards rushing, you can say that for sure. I think that we've been able to run, you know, since I've been here, we've been able to run the football efficiently. And it goes in ebbs and flows, right? You know how it goes. Sometimes the box is stacked and you got to be able to throw it. Mm-hmm. And I have so much faith in our, you know, in Jalen and, our receivers and our tight ends and, to be able to do that when we need to. But in this game, all right, you do what you need to do to win the football game, right? And that's in this game, it was about the running game. And I don't know where we are ranked in the league. I would assume we're pretty high after, you know. But anytime you go over that 200-yard mark, and I don't know how many times we've done that since I've been here. It feels like a lot. But it's just this great feeling when you're able to do that. And so I think we can, I said you're right, definitely. We're a running team, but we have the ability to do both things, and the game will dictate that. And we'll try to dictate that. Like, you're on offense for a reason, to try to dictate things at to the defense. So, but I'm so confident in our offensive line, right? I didn't even talk about them. Like, regardless of what level of football you play, the games are won and lost up. It starts up front. And I can't say enough about our offensive line. Lane Johnson, one of the best players in the NFL. One of the best players I've ever coached, that's for sure. Landon Dickerson, what a great player. Cam, and then the guys that stepped in, like Fred. Mekhi's playing really good, and then Fred Johnson steps in and has a nice game. Tyler Steen steps in and has a nice game. And it just feels like, obviously this game presents itself with injuries, and it just feels like here I can't say enough good things about our offensive line and Howie and how he's put together the team. And we've had guys step in an offensive line and win big games throughout my tenure here. A lot of credit goes to Jeff Stoutland. All the credit goes to the guys, though, of how they prepare and get themselves ready. And so when you got the guys that we have in the room, you can definitely run the football.
Nick, congratulations. Two wins in a row, and we look forward to seeing you guys Sunday in Cincinnati. Good luck in that ball game,
John,
Nick.
Hey, and John, we played some fullback football.
I saw. Day. That's awesome. Lead ISO all day, baby. Blow them up.
All right.
Stay
that
well,
was
Nick.
Awesome.
All right, see you, Nick.
Thanks, Nick.
All right. That was Nick Sirianni yesterday with us. You